So we're holding, we learned yesterday the Mishnah on Dalet Amud Bez, and so now we'll start with the Gemara. The Mishnah, to summarize, it mentioned that there's differences, there's sometimes polar differences between what a shur does, between what a shur does and what a person does. We mentioned examples in both directions. A shur causes somebody embarrassment, you're potter, but if you cause them embarrassment, you're chayev to pay boshes.
Because you're an Adam.
Because the Torah mentions, the Torah describes the concept of boshes only when a person injures another person, or causes them embarrassment or whatever. Another example was involving an Eved Kenani. And then we had the other way around. We have cases of Kom Levedid Abimineh, where Shur did something, you'd be chayev for it, because Shur is not going to be chayev Misa, for example, for burning down a stack of grain on Shabbos, or hitting your father and mother and wounding them, whereas you would, and therefore Kom Levedid Abimineh.
Not so.
Well, so person, for example, the two examples that the Mishnah gave, we're going to be focusing mainly on the first one, if a shur were to light a stack of grain on fire, the owner on Shabbos, the owner of the shur would be chayev.
What?
Would be chayev to pay for the stack of grain. Whereas if a person himself ignited somebody else's stack of grain on Shabbos, he'd be called to because somebody did out of the he's going to get executed for chilul shach. So that leads into the discussion of the Gemara. Turning to Rabbo, Kamej Rav Yechonon. Rabbo taught the following braisa in front of Rav Yechonon. Kol ha'makalkal in Turin, in general, when it comes to malachas on Shabbos, if somebody does a malacha in a destructive way, he's potter. For example, you have a number of the malachas that sound like destructive things. Tearing, for example, erasing, but all of them are meant when you're doing it for a constructive purpose. Tearing, for when we look at Shabbos, for example, way back when, that, for example, tearing, they did in the Mishkan, if one of the curtains of the Mishkan, if moth ate a hole in it, you can't sew up around the hole, it'll get the fabric around it will end up creased. So what you do is you rip some of the cloth above and below the hole to make a long rip that you can more easily sew up. That was tearing for a constructive purpose in order to re-sew it afterwards.
So that's your plan.
So that you'd be chayev, as opposed to if you just tore a piece of cloth for no good reason, just in a destructive way, you'd be potter.
Isn't chayev melacha that the purpose?
Well, that's what we're going to be discussing. Chutz mechayevel of maverick, except your Avoah's Brisa says, except for the cases of chayevel, of wounding a person or an animal, which is a told of a melacha of shofet, or mavir, or making a fire. Those, Rabbo is saying you'd be chayev even if it was for no constructive purpose at all. Amalei Rav Yechonon, however, Rav Yechonon tells him, Puk Toni Levara, go out and teach this outside, meaning outside of this medrash. Such a braisa that does not belong in the medrash because it's obviously wrong. Chovel Mavir ain't a Mishnah. This idea that when it comes to Chovel and when it comes to Mavir, even if you do them for no purpose at all, you should, without any constructive purpose, you should be Chayev. There's no such thing. There's no Mishnah that says that. The Imtim Tzalom Mishnah. And even if you're going to say you can find some Mishnah that implies that, I will tell you that actually it has to be talking about cases where you are doing it for a certain constructive purpose. Namely, the classic case of chovel, where you're doing it for a constructive purpose, is, for example, shechting. So you'll have the meat of the animal. However, I can find you a case where you're chayev for chovel even though on the face of it it seems to be destructive, but only because you're doing it with constructive purpose in mind. Namely, chovel b'tzarech l'kalbah. When it comes to wounding an animal or a person, for example, you might be doing it because you need some blood you want some blood to feed to your dog. So if you're just wounding an animal for no purpose at all, or getting an argument, you can't consider a person chayev because that can't be called a malacha. If you're doing it because you need the blood, it's true. Now that's not the normal purpose of wounding an animal. The normal purpose would be, for example, to kill it or whatever it is. But nevertheless, in that case, you'd be chayev. And mavir, what would be a case of burning something on Shabbos where you'd be chayev? Again, the normal case of burning is that you want, for example, you're making a fire in order to cook food, let's say, or melt metal, or what have you. But fine, you could have an example of tzarech la'efrei. Let's say you're making a fire for no other reason than because you need the ashes, you'd still be chayev. But not if you do it for no purpose at all.
But the Torah says,
But it has to be. But
that's a constructive purpose.
Okay, so Rashi starts explaining like this. We know the Torah tells us, the Pasuk, that you're allowed to do a bris milah on Shabbos. Therefore, now the Torah also tells us that you're not, when the Torah tells us lois varo esh, that very Pasuk actually, we darshan from it that it doesn't just mean making a fire, because making a fire, fine, there's 39 halachos. Why did the Torah single out that one? Because it comes to teach us that even, for example, you have a case of making a fire in order to carry out mitzvah basically. For example, a bas koyim with mizana, where her punishment is srepa, to swallow hot lead. So you need you need a fire in order to melt the lead. You're not allowed to do that on Shabbos.
Not allowed to kill on Shabbos.
Well, that's the point. But in the Torah mentions srepa, and from that we deduce all the other three as well. You shouldn't think, since the mitzvahs are say on basis to carry out the appropriate method of execution, therefore maybe you should be allowed to do it on Shabbos as well. No, the Torah tells us what's the varuish, and from it we learn all the other ones. The point is.
That's fine, but it's...
Well, the point, one second. The point is, when you get down to it, killing the Bas Koyin is an act of metalical, a destructive thing. You're killing her. And yet, the Torah finds it necessary to tell us that such a thing is also on Shabbos. Implying, that's what Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Bohu is arguing, the implication, therefore, is when it comes to those two malachas, even if you're being metalical, you would still be chayiv. And Rabbi Yochanan is countering that even with those, you still need to have some kind of constructive purpose.
Where did he get it from? Destructive, I understand.
Because in each of those cases, you have a certain constructive purpose. In the case of milah, you have a constructive purpose. You're making a bris milah for the baby. In the case of bas koyin, you also have a constructive purpose. You're carrying out the mitzvah, as the Torah said,
destructive to the
Ramban actually has an interesting discussion about that. The Ramban says that Rabbi Bo might be arguing, relative to the child himself, or relative to the bas koyin herself, it's destructive. I mean, to the child, it's wounding them, after all. But you're doing it sort of for a side purpose, which is, so the Torah told us a mitzvah of bris milah. The Torah told us a mitzvah of srefa bas koyin. But, so, on the person themselves, who is being affected by it, it is a powerful. So therefore, Rabbi Bohu argues on that basis, that taking it at face value then means that, even if it's totally mechalkal, even if there's no constructive purpose at all, you're chayiv. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan is pointing out, true, but in each of those cases, you do have a certain constructive purpose. So only those are the cases where it would be considered malacha, which is no constructive purpose at all. If you're just wounding for the sake of wounding, making a fire for the sake of making a fire, then you can't say that that's included in what the Torah is saying of lois tavaru eish or chayiv.
So we're saying there has to be a purpose.
So there, according to Rabbi Yochanan, there has to be some kind of purpose, which is going to lead to how we explain our Mishnah. But before we get into that, Tosfos has a long discussion over here on all the ins and outs of this, because now there is a machlokas in a number of places in Shas called Mekalko B'chabura. Exactly that. If somebody is doing a destructive act by wounding an animal, is he chayev or potter? Rabbi Shimon says he's chayiv. Rabbi Yehuda says that he's potter. So on the face of it, Tosfos starts by saying, Rabbeinu Shmuel, I guess the Rashbam, says, okay, so maybe the machlokas of Rabbi Bohu and Rabbi Yochanan over there is exactly that machlokas panoyim. Rabbi Bohu would hold like Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yochanan would hold like Rabbi Yehuda. The problem is with that, Tosfos says, the problem is that, what is Rabbi Yochanan telling him, puktan levara, like such a braisa that does not belong at all in this medrash? Okay, I don't hold like Rabbi Shimon. Is that a reason to throw out the whole braisa? Fine, just say the braisa is like Rabbi Shimon, and I hold like Rabbi Yehuda. So therefore, Tosfos goes on to argue that, no, both of them are arguing within Rabbi Shimon's opinion. Granted, Rabbi Shimon says, but nevertheless, does that mean that Rabbi Shimon would say, even if there was no constructive purpose at all, or is it that at least there has to be some minor constructive purpose? In other words, this case that we're mentioning over here, for example, wounding an animal to get blood, you might argue that's not a normal purpose that you would wound an animal for. Rabbi Shimon nevertheless might say, still, there is enough purpose over there to make you chayiv. Rabbi Yehuda would say, no, you need a more solid purpose than that to be chayiv. But Rabbi Yochanan would be saying, Rabbi Bo, if there's absolutely no purpose whatsoever, even Rabbi Shimon would not hold that you're chayiv. Tosfos also gets into
argue on the degree. Basically.
So they argue on the degree. According to Tosfos, then they're arguing on the degree, right? Okay. So now Tanan. Okay, let's consider what our Mishnah says and see how this fits with what Rabbi Bohu or Rabbi Yochanan are saying. Shura Shahidlik is a goddess for Shabbos Chayev. We said if a person's Shura ignites somebody's stack of grain on Shabbos, then the owner of the Shura is Chayev. Well, who Shahidlik is a goddess for Shabbos Potter? Whereas we said if the owner himself were to have done that, he'd be Potter because come live with the Rabbinate. Now, the Katoni, who Dumya the Shura? Now, on the face of it, if the Mishnah is trying to point out the parallelism where in one case you Chayev, in one case you Potter, evidently we must be talking about that. The person, conceivably are doing it in a similar way to the shur might have been doing it. So the only difference is whether the shur did it or whether you did it. Not as far as the intent, but just as far as who did it, you or the shur. Now, my shur did the like kabayule. Now, on the face of it, when the shur ignites the stack of grain, it's not because it needs anything. It doesn't need the ashes. It doesn't need anything. Presumably, the shur is just acting on instinct, taking a coal over there or whatever and dropping it on the stack of grain, causing a fire. Then on the face of it, when if the Mishnah is implying that a person in the same circumstances were to do it, he would be potter because come later the Rabbanan, meaning that he'd be chayev mitzah on the grounds of Shabbos. If it's only potter and pesher nidin menashe. Yet the Mishnah is saying that he's potter because he's chayev mitzah according to Rabbi Yochanan. Why should he be chayev mitzah? There's no constructive purpose here at all. Not even he burnt it for the ashes, because when a shur does it, it's not burning it for the ashes. So by the same logic, when a person's doing it, he's not burning it for the ashes either. He's just burning it stam, for no good reason. According to Rabbi Yochanan, that shouldn't be considered a malacha, because it's total makalkal without any, it's totally useless. So according to Rabbi Yochanan, why should he be chayev mitzah? And the Mishnah is saying that he is. Tosfos points out that really, in a certain sense, the question is according to Rabbi Bohu also. Even Rabbi Bohu agreed. Rabbi Bohu had said that if you're doing it without any purpose at all. I don't fully understand Tosfos' question, but okay, let's set that aside then. Okay. Anyway. Okay, so the answer, we have a steer on Rabbi Yochanan. Okay, the answer is loy, not necessarily, because you could argue the other way around. Shur adumya didday. No, argue the other way around. That they were saying that the shur is doing it in a way similar to the way you might have done it. Mahud kaboyle. So again, according to Rabbi Yochanan, you have to have had some constructive purpose, even if it's the most minor constructive purpose. All you need is the ashes. Then we'd have to assume that, yes, what the Mishnah is telling us, if you did it in that way, you'd be chayev mitzah. If a shur does it in exactly the same way, with exactly the same intention, it's not chayev mitzah, obviously. Therefore, you're chayev for the damages. Mahu dekaboyle, just like when you set the stack of grain on fire is because you wanted to accomplish something thereby, even if it's just that you wanted some ashes. I'm sure it's a kaboyle. Then the same thing, you would have to assume that the case of the shur has to be that it needs it. Which, okay, Rashi says, not strictly speaking. I mean, the truth is it wouldn't matter what the shur's intent was. Either way, you're chayev. The point is, all we're saying is, given that, according to Rabbi Yochanan, you have to have the person doing it with some kind of intent. If you want to say that the two parts of the Mishnah are parallel, the only way would be to say the shur had an intent also because it wanted the ashes. But not to say if the shur just did it out of instinct for the heck of it, of course you'd be chayev as well.
How can you say that
wrong? That's what we're going to say. The question is, where have you ever heard of a shur having such intent, having such intelligence to set something on fire because it wants the end result? Rabbi Ibya answers, yeah, you know what, I can give you an example. You have a smart shur. You have an intelligent shur, also like a shicha begabai. It has a bite, an insect bite or something, on its back. So it wants to have something to soothe it. The kaboy l'mikliye. So it in its animal brain decides to burn down something. The iganda bekutman, that will have ashes to roll around in. The ashes help soothe the stinging of the bite. This is somebody else's stack of grain. So all the shur knows in its shur mind is that it needs ashes. And somehow it's able to put two and two together and realize that to have ashes, you need something burning. The question is then, fine, okay, but then how would you know what the shur's intention is? Again, the point Rashi says it's not like the shur's intention would really make a difference. Either way you're going to be chayav. But if the Mishnah is trying to tell us again a parallelism according to the Yechanan, that, according to everybody, that's how the Mishnah goes. If the Yechanan is going to have to explain the Mishnah, that the Mishnah is trying to tell us, there can be a case where you did the Havara with a certain constructive purpose in mind, to have the ashes, in a similar vein, if a shur were to do the same thing, you'd be chayav for the burning and potter for Shabbos. That would imply that you have to have some way of distinguishing whether the shur did it stam for the heck of it, or whether it did it because it wants the ashes. How would you know? You can't interview the shur. The answer is, let's say we actually see that after the shur set the stack of grain on fire, afterwards we see it rolling around in the ashes. Then we can understand that it did it with that purpose in mind. Okay, the question is, this is all very nice theoretically, you ever heard of such a thing in real life that an animal is able to think ahead like that? Then do they? Yes, I can give you an example. There was a shur in your papa's household. The Aruch says it means his gums, whatever, something in his mouth was bothering him. So what the shur did is it went into the house, it pushed off the cover of a barrel or container or whatever of beer. Now Rav Papa was a brewer. We find in many, many places in the chat, Rav Papa was a beer brewer and he actually became quite wealthy from it. So I guess there were always containers of beer around his house. So this shur went, found a container, pushed off the cover, the shossi shifra, drank some of the beer out of it, the ipsi, and was healed. It made him feel better. So we see that a shur is capable of thinking ahead like that. So
maybe
the same,
it was Rav Papa's shur.
Maybe. Yeah, could be. I don't know. No, I mean, we find, for example, the famous thing of Rav Pinchas ben Yair's donkey that by instinct wouldn't eat things that weren't nicer or wouldn't eat food that was stolen. And yeah, it's a story in Gemara Cholin. Here it's not, but that's a matter of mitzvah. That's, you could say, a tzaddik has an effect on his animals as far as mitzvah. This isn't, but yeah, okay. Okay. So yeah. So you could explain the Mishnah according to Rav Yechanan, by the way. By the way, the Baal HaMor, by the way, has a different understanding. This, that the Gemara was asking, how would you know whether the shur did it with intent to use the ashes or whether it just did it samazoi? The Baal HaMor has a different understanding of it. Not like Rashi, who says it's not really, and in the end it won't make a difference, this is how do we understand the Mishnah. He says there might actually be a difference. If the animal did it in order to roll around in the ashes, rolling around in the ashes, which is something that it has hanah from, would be shame. So therefore, it would be a toldah of shame. You'd have to pay nezek sholeh. As opposed to, if the animal was just doing it stam, like out of spite or whatever, it would be kerem. It's not usual for an animal to light a stack of grain on fire, then it would be chatinezet. So point 10, that's the point of the Gemara's question, how do we know what its intent was? However, the Mochomis, the Ramban, argues on that. He says it wouldn't really make a difference either way on the face of it. Even if you argued that it was shame, fine, but it would still be tzurus, as we learned in the previous parak. It's not a direct thing. It's indirectly. He took a coal and set them, then he took coals or whatever and set the, and said, therefore it would only be chatinezet either way. Yeah. Okay. I mean, I guess you could for answer the Baal HaMor might answer. Okay, but there's at least a difference whether the chatzi nezek, fine, it's only chatzi nezek either way. But still, is it mamon or is it knas? As we discussed before, tzoros is mamon, keren is knas. So yeah.
What would be the difference between mamon and knas in that case?
Many things. We said before, for example, mamon can be judged by a base in not of smuchim, knas cannot. Chatzin as a tzurus is collected min ha'aliyah. It doesn't matter. It's not capped at the value of the animal. Keren is capped at the value of the animal. A couple of differences. If he's murdered a knas, he's potter. If he's murdered a mammon, he's not. Yeah. Okay. Fine. Okay. So far what we've gotten to is we're saying that we have to say that the Mishnah's case for sure is meant to be similar to the way a person would have done it. A person is burning down a stack of grain with a certain intent to get the ashes, let's say, which according to Rabbi Yochanan is the minimal amount you need for him to be chayev, and the shur maybe is doing it for the same purpose as well. However, Omer Rabbanan Kamei de Rav Papa, however, the Rabbanan said in front of a papa, they asked me, Motzis Amrit Shoda Dumya today. What? How is it possible to say that the Mishnah is implying that the Shoda did something in a way parallel to a person might have done something? V'hokatani, we have earlier in the Mishnah, Shoda should be ishpatu, that if a Shoda causes busha to somebody, causes boshas to somebody, potter, then you're potter for that. But who should be a chayev? Whereas if a person committed boshas, he should be chayev. You have to ask.
So, what can you deduce from that?
Well, the question is, shoda dumya didei skaven labaya sheikh mashakba. If you're going to say that, so you're going to say, okay, a person, you're saying intended to cause boshas, and you charge him for the boshas. The implication would be a shoda intended to cause boshas. How does a shoda intend to cause boshas?
That's brilliant.
Come on, yeah. We can understand, fine, if it's going to help the shoda himself somehow, then he'll do it, like burning down grain to get ashes or knocking off the lid in order to get beef, not just to cause beef. Yeah. The answer is, Kagunshin is Skavin Lahazik. Yes, but you could have the case, let's say, in the case of a person, it can be that he meant to do the Nezik, even though he didn't specifically mean the Boshes. And in the case of a shoda, it can be the same thing. He meant to do the nezek, because that's the definition of keren, after all. The animal is out to be destructive. But he didn't know that he didn't know. It's an animal, after all, that he's doing boshes. Nevertheless, you would think it's a... Nevertheless, the Mishnah is pointing out that there's a difference between a shoda and a person. In that case, a person would be higher for both the nezek and the boshes. A shoda, you're higher for the nezek, you're potter for the boshes. In fact, the Braisa says, Nisgavan lahazik, if somebody intends to cause hezek, after Nisgavan lahazik, even if he did not specifically intend to cause boshes, you nevertheless chayev for both. We said before, at the end of the previous perek, if it was b'shogeg or whatever, you're potter for boshes, because you only chayev on boshes if it was deliberate. It doesn't have to be that the boshes itself was deliberate, it's enough if the nezek was deliberate. Very well, then, you can still have a person does a nezek deliberately, and along with it comes boshes, you chayev for both. A shur does a nezek deliberately, and along with it comes boshes, you chayev for the nezek, potter for the boshes. So you can still understand the Mishnah that way. Rava says you don't need all of this really. You can say that you don't need all of this kvetch that maybe the shur is doing, the shur has intent or whatever. You could just say masnisin b'shoyi. The Mishnah is referring to something of shoyi. We're assuming all this time that the Mishnah was talking about... Now, okay, well, let me show you. Well, Rashi and Tosfos have different understandings. I mean, I'll start with Tosfos, it's a little easier to understand according to the words of the Gemara that we have here. All this time, we were assuming that the Mishnah is talking about where you, or the Shur, the case may be, set the stack of grain on fire deliberately. And that led us into the question, what kind of deliberate intent would an animal have? Now, Rava is saying, you don't even need that. You could say the din of the Mishnah would still apply if you set it on fire by mistake, you didn't realize it's Shabbos, let's say, and nevertheless, even though you're not chayev nisa, you'll still be potter from tashlumin for reasons that we're going to say now. And in the case of a shur, therefore, it doesn't matter. The shur's intent doesn't matter. The point is, regardless of the intent of the shur, even if you consider that the shur is doing it in a form of shurig, because the shur doesn't have any intelligence, then... If it were a person doing it, he would be potter from tashlumin because of kamla v'dirabimine, even though he's not actually getting executed because of the shur. Fine, a shur is the same thing. Now, so Rashi learns these words, masnisin b'shogig, a little different. That Rashi says we don't literally mean that the Mishnah is talking about shogig versus mezid. We mean the same way as there is a distinction between shogig and mezid, where mezid you chayev misa for breaking Shabbos, and shogeg, you're not, the same thing. There is the distinction, it's true. Rav Yochanan is making a distinction when it comes to mavir, whether you had some constructive intent, for example, getting the ashes, or whether you had no particular intent, you had no constructive intent at all, you're just setting a fire for the sake of setting a fire. Very well, according to Rav Yochanan, it would come out that if you set the fire deliberately, so it is b'mezid, but you had no intention of using the ashes or any such thing, according to Rav Yochanan, you'd be potter because you're makalkal. That's all the Mishnah is saying. You could say that the Mishnah, in other words, is telling us that in a case where you did do it b'mezid, however, it's a way where you're not going to be chayav for chilul Shabbos, nevertheless, come lev did adam and they still apply. That's that rather, so in other words, Rashi is saying that rather
would
that,
not be higher.
So masnisin b'shogeg, according to Rashi, doesn't literally mean that the Mishnah is talking about a shogeg. It means the Mishnah is talking about a case that's similar to shogeg in the sense that you're not going to be chayev mitzvah. But it's not a matter of shogeg versus mezid. It's a matter of constructive intent versus non-constructive intent. That's the thing. Tosfos argues, among other things, that, the lashon of the Gemara must miss and b'shogeg doesn't count like that. And so therefore, Tosfos prefers their own explanation, which is that literally rava means Mishnah is talking about we set the grain on fire b'shogeg as opposed to doing it amazing. Why is that? The Tanit Mechizkiya. The reason is because of what the Yeshiva of Chizkiya taught in a Braisa. The Tanit Mechizkiya, we learned this a couple of times in Ksubas. Make Adam and Make Behema. The Pasuk puts together, the Pasuk makes a hekesh between a person who kills an animal and a person who kills a person and a person who kills an animal. And then at the end of Parashat Emor, Make Behema Yishamena or Make Adam Yomos. So they're juxtaposed in the same Pasuk. Therefore, we learn from it. When it comes to killing an animal, there's no distinction whether you kill the Peshogig or the Mezid, whether you miscaven or any miscaven. Miscaven would mean that that's Peshogig and Mezid. Miscaven means that you were aiming for this animal, or any miscaven that you were aiming for some other animal, let's say. There's no distinction if you killed the animal whether it was on the down, whether it was on the downswing or on the upswing. Now, when it comes to a person, when it comes to Golos, when it comes to going to the Ohr Mikvah, the Mishnah and the Gemara and Makkos explain at some length that there is a distinction that if a person, for example, the classic case of Golos, for example, the Torah described, is, as we said the other day, somebody is chopping wood and a piece flies off, the axe head flies off or whatever, and kills somebody else. The Gemara explained, the Mishnah and the Gemara there based on Sukkim, that there's a difference, for example, was it on the downswing when you're swinging downward with the axe, or was it on the upswing that you killed the person? Or other... I think we mentioned it briefly. In connection with the
Sukkim. Absolutely, the Kavanah upswing is
not so much Kavanah v'shalayv Kavanah, but the Derech Yirida on the downswing, you'd be high of Golos. On the upswing, you're not. The Rambam says the reason is because on the upswing it's less likely to happen, and therefore it's more annoying. But whatever, the point still remains. I mean, there are similar kinds of things. If you're climbing up a ladder and you fall off the ladder and then fall on somebody and kill them, you're not high of Golos. If you're descending the ladder and you fall off the ladder and kill the person, you are high of Golos. So whatever. The point is, none of those distinctions apply when you kill an animal. L'chayvin mamon, l'potrin mamon. None of those distinctions matter as far as pattering the person from paying money. El l'chayvin mamon, regardless whether there was intent or not, up or down, etc. You're always chayiv for killing somebody else's animal. Ach makay adam. Therefore, Tanit Vechizkiya says the same thing. But again, from the Hekesh, we learn that when it comes to killing a person, there's no distinction between whether it was shogeg or mezid, ben miskaven l'shem miskaven, ben derech yirid l'derech avia, but the opposite, not l'chayv in moment. In none of those cases are you going to be l'chayv in money, el l'poter in moment. In all those cases, you're going to pater him from paying. Meaning that kum l'vidid avimineh does not only apply where there's an actual chiyuv, such as if it was mezid, but even if it was shogeg.
That we see
because the same way as those things between shogeg and mezid in killing an animal, you're always higher for paying. The same way in reverse, when it comes to killing a person, if whether it was the shogeg or the mezid, you're never going to be higher for any payments that come at the same time as the killing. So therefore, we see. So returning to our Mishnah then, so we see therefore that when it comes to lighting the stack of grain on fire, therefore, and it's not only killing a person. The point is, we're broadening that to all cases of kum l'vidid avimineh. That when we say the concept of kum l'vidid avimineh, it does not only apply if the chiyuv misa can actually be carried out. It's as long as the action that the person did, that the mazik did, is something that could result in a chiyuv misa, were it with edim and hatsura and mezid and so on and so forth.
There's no union of misa.
We learned in Ksubas, there was Machlokes of Machonim ben Akana and Chachamim, whether it also applies in the case of Kares. The halacha is that it doesn't. Machonim ben Akana held that it doesn't, but that's not the halacha. But when it comes to Mitzvah Beisdin, and Shabbos is Mitzvah Beisdin, then yes, the point of Tanit Vechizkiya is it doesn't matter. Regardless whether there's going to be an actual Chiyuv Mitzvah, because there were Edim and Hasra and it was Remezid, or whether it was potentially, let's say for example, it was Shogeg, where there's no chance of Chiyuv Mitzvah Beisdin, but it is an act that could have involved a Chiyuv Mitzvah. Yeah. Nevertheless, you're part of the Tashlok.
But Shogeg, you could have been involved?
Yes, because if you're done, it's amazing. If you've done the exact same action, you made it. But the point is, if you had done it for Mezid, you'd be Chayav Mitzvah. So therefore, even you did it for Shogeg, you're not Chayav Mitzvah, but come live with the Rabbi, and it's still a part.
It's a derivative.
Yes. And therefore, again, according to Tosfos, our Mishnah could just be talking about where you lit the stack of grain on fire by mistake, and according to Rashi, where you did it completely without any positive intent, where according to Rav Yechon, and therefore you'd be potter from this, even if you had done it for Mezid, and therefore even in our Mishnah, you did it for Mezid, you're still potter. Tosfos goes into a little bit of discussion over here that actually there are three different things that Tana Dvei Chizki is teaching us. Number one, the Shogeg versus Mezid distinction, which is something that everybody agrees with. And then the Miskaven and She'ena Miskaven is a machlokes in a few places in chat. If somebody is intending to kill one person and by accident kills another person, are they chayiv misa or not? Or are they chayiv hashlumin or not? That's a machlokes in a few places in chat. And then the Derech Aliyah. And Derech Yurida is the third detail about that we're saying that when it comes to killing a person, that whether they'll be golos or not. Omele Rabbanan L'Rava. So now one last thing, though, that Rabbanan asked Rava, me mufis mukmas lo b'shogig. So what are you telling me? You're trying to shtelein on Mishnah the case where the person did it b'shogig, or where he did it again in a manner similar to shogig in the sense that he did it without any intent.
Me
mufis. How are you able mukmas lo to shtelein the Mishnah b'shogig? Muhammad's nation, you did b'nafshik b'fani. The Mishnah clearly says that he's potter because. He's judged for his life. He's Chayav Misa. Chayav Misa implies that he did the Mezid. So what are you talking about, Shogeg? But the answer is half the time. Kivin did the Mezid, and he did Menafshay. Since had he done it the Mezid, he would be Chayav Menafshay, the Hechidomi, the Kabbalah Ephraim. And what would be a case would be if he did it intending to collect the ashes, Tashka B'Shogeg Potter. So now, if he set the stack of grain on fire in order to collect the ashes, then we would say that's what Rabbi Yechon was saying, he'd be chayav. What we're saying is that since the same action with a different intent would have made him chayav, hashta b'shogig, so now he did it b'shogig, not intending to collect the ashes, or total b'shogig, then he's also possible. The Mishnah is not literally saying that he is actually being judged for his life, that he is actually chayav mitzah, just that it's an action that could have led to him being chayav mitzah had it been done with a different intent.
So whether he is or could have been is enough.
From the thing.
And that's
because that's what Tanaz Vechizki is. The applies to Mishnah says, one shur is chasing another shur, behuzak, and the one that the one in front, the one that's being pursued, ends up getting injured. So the owner of that shur says to the other owner, your shur damaged mine, it gored it, or kicked it, or what have you. The other one says, no, it injured itself on a rock. So the one whose ox was injured is going to have to bring proof in order to collect.
The plaintiff,
yeah. Now, on the face of it, what's the chiddush in that? So there's actually two different ways of explaining when we say over here the seller locker. Rashi, interestingly enough, says, now you would think the seller locker means that the owner of the pursuing shur says, my shur was pursuing yours. Fine. As it was running away, it tripped over a rock. But Rashi does not say that. Rashi instead says, Mishaka Chayav the seller, your ox must have been scratching itself against the rock, the locker, and it got injured. Now, why is that? Because Rashi might be implying by that that if, on the other hand, so that would work. On the other hand, if the owner of the pursuing ox is saying, it's true, my ox was chasing yours, yours must have therefore tripped over a rock, that might make it chayev, because that's it's true, it's grama, it's an indirect thing, but nevertheless, certain cases of grama, dinit garmi, we've said, we've talked about before, you are chayev for it. So only if the owner of the pursuing ox is saying, I had nothing to do with it, my ox pursuing yours had nothing at all to do with yours getting injured, not even indirectly, is when you would say, I'm waiting for Chavela Barana. There are other Rishonim who learn differently. They actually learn that, no, the seller locker literally means that the owner of the pursuing ox says, I agree mine was pursuing yours, but then yours tripped over a rock, fine. Nevertheless, it's grumma, and if you say that grumma is potter, then I should be potter on those
grumma
words. Meaning an indirect thing. No, indirect, because it's not a direct thing. My ox didn't directly injure yours. Yours tripped on a rock or whatever and got injured. It's true, it was triggered by the fact that it was running away from my ox. Fine, but it's not a direct thing. Therefore, I should be potter. That's two different ways of looking at it.
But both ways agree that a direct nezek is chayav.
Of course. No, that's the thing. According to Rashi's way of looking at it, you might be chayav for an indirect nezek, depending on how indirect it is. In this case, where Shur A is pursuing Shur B, and because in the pursuit Shur B tripped over a rock, you might argue that the owner of Shur A is chayav. On the grounds of grumma, not really grumma, he said grumma is potter, but on the grounds of dina de garmi, it's a more direct cause.
What's the difference between dina de garmi and
that's the difference. Grumma, I mentioned before, the Ramban has a long explanation about it, the other Rishonim have a long give and take about it, but among others, the idea is that grumma is a more direct, there's a less direct causation between A and B, versus dina de garmi, there's a more direct causation.
Where is the difference?
That's the, how you split the difference is there's a lot of discussion. Okay. Anyway, continues the Mishnah. What if you have two oxen chasing after one? Eventually, the one ends up getting gored, but which one gored it? Zeh meshocheh hizik, zeh meshocheh hizik. Each one says it's your shur that caused the damage. Shneim p'turim, both of them are potter, because, again, each one of them, again, he'd have to bring proof that it was that particular one.
If there's proof,
fine. Im hoyu shneim
p'turim and tili.
Yeah, of course. Im hoyu shneim shalish echad, however, both those oxen belong to one person, shneim chayavim, and both of them are chayav, because, what I mean, both of them are chayav, we'll discuss in the Gemara. What I mean, shneim, we'll discuss in the Gemara tomorrow on Lamed Vav Amud Aleph. But at least on the face of it, it means that the person himself is going to be chayav, because no matter how you look at it, it's one of his shvarim. We're going to have to get into
the
shneim on the face of it means both shvarim, but obviously both shvarim didn't injure it, only one did.
Right.
So therefore, we're going to have to figure out tomorrow what that means.
But the chayav both each get a strike. You know, you get three strikes in a row, each one, and you get the category, the gore.
Not necessarily, because we don't know which one gored. That's what we're going to have. That's the Gemara is going to take up at the top of Lamed Aleph. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. The Chavos Yoreh, by the way, points out an interesting thing on the previous thing where we said that Zer Meshocha Hizik was Zer Meshocha Hizik. He says even by the same. He says, for example, you have, let's say, imagine that Reuben and Shimon both have their animals grazing in the field. Reuben has 100 ox and Shimon has one, and then Levi has an ox there which gets gored. On the face of it, it's a 100-to-1 chance that it was one of Reuben's oxen. Nevertheless, no, you still need Hamoitz Mechaber Lebraya. It could, after all, have been Shimon's ox. And unless you have proof, then you can't go according to Reuben in a case like that. In her from the moment, Achar Reuben. Okay. Continues the Mishnah. Let's take another case. What if among the two oxen the two oxen belong to one person. So we're saying no matter what, that person is going to be responsible to pay. However, so now one of the pursuing oxen was large, so it's worth more. The echad katan, the other one was small, so it's worth less. Remember, we're talking about a tam. A tam, you only go up to the value of the animal.
Right.
So hanizik going with godel hizik. So the nizik wants to say it was a larger one that caused the hezik. That way you can collect more of his chatzin hezik. The mazik going with lekiel katan hizik. The mazik said no, it was a small one. Or echad tam ve'echad muad, or let's say among the two oxen, one was a tam, one was a muad. And nizik and muad hizik. So the nizik wants to say it was a muad, so I get to collect nezik shalim. But mazik and maloki el a tam hizik, and the mazik says that no, it was a tam. Again, hamoitz mechaber el avaraya. Another case, how you on these zok and shnayim? What if there were two oxen that were injured? Echad gadol ve'echad katan. One was large and one was small. V'amazik in shnayim echad gadol ve'echad katan. And they were attacked by two animals, also one large and one small. And again, let's assume that the attacking animals were tam. So a nizik v'im a gadol hizik as a gadol ve'katan as a katan. So the nizik wants to argue that the larger one injured my larger animal and the smaller one injured my smaller animal. Therefore, again, when it comes to the chatzin nezik, each one I'll be able to collect for the full chatzin nezik. The mazik says no. my small ox injured your large one, so therefore my small one is only worth 50. The damage to your big one was 200, but you're only going to be able to select, you're only going to be able to select 50 out of the 100 Chatsi Nezek. And the other way around, the large one injured the small one. The whole damage to the small one is only 50. The big one is worth 200, so you're only going to be entitled to 50 out of it. Yeah. Or another case, Echad Tam Ve'Echad Mu'ad. Again, let's say the two attacking oxen, one was Tam, one was Mu'ad. And Nizik and Mu'ad, Hizik and Tagoda with Tam as a problem. So the Nizik argues that the Mu'ad injured the large one, therefore we'll be able to collect more, therefore we'll be able to collect Nezik Shalim for the large one. But Tam is a cotton, the Tam injured the small one, and fine, I won't lose as much out of getting only Chatsi Nezik for that one. But Mazik and Malaki are the Tam as a god or the Mu'ad as a cotton. In all those cases, again, Hamoit Machabe al Avarayim. Well,
we can arrive here.
Yeah, well, that's what the Gemara is going to, that's going to lead to the discussion of the Gemara. Amr of Chiba Abba, Zoyte Merit, based on this Mishnah, we can learn Chalukin Olav Chaverav al Sumchus. We can see that the other Chachamim disagree with Sumchus. We're going to have a case later on, the beginning of the fifth Perek, that a case where you have a moment or multiple suffix, the money where you're not sure who it belongs to. The actual case over there in the Mishnah is you have the first Mishnah in the fifth Perek, a sure gores a para. Later on, you find that there is a dead baby next to the para. The para was pregnant. Now, was the baby born before the attack and therefore just it died on its own, or did it miscarry because of the attack? So you're not sure. You obviously have to pay for the part of it, but you have to pay for the lot as well. It's moment on multiple sophic. Sumchus says in that case that what you do is you divide it. The owner of the mazik animal is responsible for 50% of the value of the blood. The Chachamim say, based on our Mishnah, we see that no, the Chachamim hold on Moitzim HaChaveh
Olav Arayah. Sumchus says in any case,
okay, so Tosfos does point out there is a distinction. How did the sophic come about?
Right.
Is it that we have objective facts in front of us where there's a suffix because we weren't around to view what actually happened? Like in that case, we find the dead baby and we have no way of knowing. Versus, you can have a case where the suffix only comes into existence because of their claim. Tosfos gives an example. I mean, imagine you have a case, for example, the first mission above Matthias, is Shnaim Urchim Metalis, right? You have two people coming to Beis Din holding a talus and each one claims it's mine. Some courts are not going to say in a case like that, at a moment I'm multiple self of Chokin. Tosfos says, after all, I mean, what's the logic? I mean, if somebody says to somebody else, this talus that you're wearing is mine, you're going to say, some courts going to say you divide it? No. Sumchus's thing, at the moment I'm looking for Sophic Koken, is when we don't know the facts themselves. Even without them arguing, there's no way of determining the facts. As in our case over here with the different oxen, which one is the actual one that injured which one, etc. So Sumchus says, at the moment I'm looking for Sophic Koken. Now, Rav Abba Bar Memel asks Rav Chiya Bar Abba, "Omar Sumchus Asuba Bori Bori? Are you telling me then that Sumchus would say his din even where both of them are making definite claims? Now, again, you know, there can be two different kinds of claims, right? You can have Bori Bori, where one has a definite claim and the other one has a definite counterclaim. And then you can have various cases, as we're going to discuss, of Bori versus Shema. You can have a case where you can have the opposite case, and both of them are only making Shema claims. But then you can have one person is saying, Bori, I am certain that these are the facts. And the other one is saying, maybe, but you don't know for sure, and I don't know for sure. Nobody knows for sure. That's Bori v'Shema. And you can have Shema versus Bori as well.
And what's the difference then?
The difference would be that if you have Bori, where the plaintiff is saying, not Shema, he's saying for sure, I don't owe this amount. Are you telling me then that Sumchus would still say that's still moment on multiple sophic and you divide it? Mela, in a case where one or the other of them is claiming Shema, where the plaintiff is claiming Shema, or the defendant is claiming Shema, okay, but where both of them are
doing everything Shema until the date in context, right?
No.
Who cares what they say?
No, it still matters what they themselves are claiming. Are they claiming, I know for a fact that this is the case, or are they claiming, I don't have any way of knowing, and you don't have any way of knowing, but, that's the question. Sumchus is saying moment on multiple topics. Okay. That's the question. Even in a case of Bori, would Sumchus really hold that way? That you're going to divide it? Abba tells him yes. Sumchus would hold of his din of a moment on multiple suffix, even in that case. So the question is, okay, so how do we know then that our Mishnah in fact is talking about a Bori Ubori case, which led Rabbi Abba in the first place to say that evidently we see from this Mishnah that they don't agree with Sumchus? What makes him say that it's a case even of Bori Ubori? The Tosfos explains the point of the question is that who says you have to say the Mishnah is talking about Bori Ubori? The answer is Dikatani, because the Mishnah said Ze'em Eshochek, Ze'em Eloiki, because the Mishnah says that you have the case of two oxen that belong to two different people chasing after one ox of somebody else, where the each one is saying Shochek, one is saying you're sure caused the damage, Ze'em Eloiki, and the other one says not so. The not so implies not I'm not sure whether it is or not. I know for a fact that it's not.
But that's
Bori Ubori. The Loshen Loiki, now Tosfos points out, the Loshen Loiki in and of itself doesn't necessarily mean a definitive claim. We had a case, Tosfos brings from a case that we learned in Psulas last year, where a husband finds his wife is not a Psula, and she claims that was Nana, and he says, Loiki, you had relations voluntarily or whatever. The loyki doesn't mean for sure he knows, but okay, Tosfos says it's true. Loyki in and of itself doesn't have to be a definitive statement, but in our Mishnah, the fact that the Mishnah chose that wording means it means that over there, you know, when the husband is saying loyki al jerusa ishat, he can't mean for sure I know you. How is he supposed to know? Whereas over here, if the Mishnah really meant that it was a Shema claim, it shouldn't have used the word loiki, which would mislead us into thinking that he's making a Bori. So Rabbi Chaya Ba'ava said, the fact that the Mishnah did use that wording implies that we're talking about two Bori claims. Each one is making a Bori claim that it's loiki, as the second one is making a Bori claim, I'm definitely sure that it was not my show. Maski for a papa. So now though a papa asks, and that midiration, Bori Ubori, Sefer Nami, Bori Ubori. Fine. Then if you're going to say that the earlier case in the Mishnah is talking about two Bori claims, one against the other, then you have to say the later part of the Mishnah is also talking about such a case. Now, Ema Sefer, however, let's look at the actual Sefer. We said that when you have the two potentially attacking animals belong to the same person, one was a larger animal, one was smaller. We said if the Nizik claims it was the larger one that did the damage, the Mazik claims it was the smaller one. And Loiki, it was the smaller one, or Echad Tam, Echad Muad, we said one was Tam, one was Muad, Nizik and Muad, Hizik and Mazik and Loiki of the Tam Nizik. You're saying Hamoitzim Chavel of Araya. So what does that imply? Ha Loi Maisi Raya Shakil Kedam Mazik. Ha Loi Maisi Raya, which would seem to imply then. Okay, so in this case, look, we know the two. Wait, one second. In this case, remember the two animals belong to one person. The argument is basically. I'm claiming that if you're sure that was worth $400 that did the damage. You're claiming that you're sure that's only worth $100 that did the damage. But either way, I stand to collect at least $100, right? Regardless whether I bring proof or not, it seems that Hole Maisi Raya, it seems to imply if I have a Raya that it was the $400 one, then I'll be entitled to collect my full Chati Nezik, up to $400. Like this, if I don't bring a Raya, I will still be entitled to collect something. You yourself are admitting that it was a smaller animal, so I'll at least be entitled to that. Hole Maisi Raya, it implies that if he were to not bring a Raya, Shoko could am a Mazik. He would be taking the amount equivalent to what the Mazik says. Which Tosfos points out, we see that in the words. Because we see that in the words, Hamoitzi Mechavel of a Raya. Hamoitzi implies you're trying to take something away from somebody where it's not certain whether you have a right to. Now, in this case, the Mazik implicitly is admitting, by saying it was $100 sure, he's implicitly admitting, I owe you $100. You are claiming that, no, you owe me, that no, the total head this was $400. It was the $400 sure that did it, therefore you owe me $400. So the argument, the mercy is on the remaining $300. The $100 seems to not be in dispute, right? The problem with that, and again, we're assuming so far that we're talking Bori versus Bori. The Mazik is saying it was definitely the $100 one. The Nizik is saying it was definitely the $400 one. The problem with that is, if we're going to learn the Mishnah that way, In that case, we would see that our Mishnah is a contradiction to a statement of Rav Bar Nosson, which he says, famously, in Tane Chitim Bahudalo Besod in Potter. He says that if Reuven claims from Shimon, you owe me X amount of wheat, and Shimon says, I owe you X amount of barley, then he's Potter. He's Potter from paying the wheat because he's denying it, it's Kofar Hakol. The point is, we know there's a din of Kofar Hakol, that if you deny the whole thing, you're Potter, and I'm sorry, I'm a Drabonim, it's a Shavuot Hesed. This is before Shavuot Hesed came around. You're potter for the wheat. You're also potter for the barley. And the reason you potter for barley for the barley actually different. Rishonim have several different approaches why it is. The Rashi learns that it's a matter of let's say, for example, that at some previous time Reuven had in fact
wheat.
That's not the point. The point is they're two different species. Rashi learns like this. But when Reuven says, you owe me wheat, implicitly he's saying by that, you don't owe me barley. Meaning, if there were ever before that you owe me barley, I'm Muslim. So now you're saying, I owe you barley, very well, but you're admitting to something that the guy was just implicitly Muslim. Therefore, that's it. You're a Muslim on it.
So how would he say it?
So if you wanted to say it, he would have said, you owe me wheat and you owe me barley. By saying only you owe me, let's say for example, he did owe, in fact, at one time owe him wheat and barley. But by saying now only you owe me wheat, implicitly you're being moichel on the barley. There's other explanations also. The Rambam and a number of other, Rishonim learn that Shimon is able to say, Meshata ha'yisibach. When I said I owe you barley, I meant it as a joke. Look, you're coming to me for wheat that I don't in fact owe you. So I'm saying, you know, for the heck of it, okay, you know, yeah, sure, I owe you barley. Not literally that I'm actually admitting to owing you barley. And then there's a third explanation, an explanation from the Rosh, that it's not really a matter of being that Reuven is implicitly being moichelet, it's rather implicitly that Shimon is being moider, that the other guy doesn't owe him barley. Again, by mentioning only wheat, he's implicitly being moider, but you don't owe me barley. And therefore, when the guy says, I owe you barley, well, it's a different thing. Anyway, the point is that in this case, in the case of our Mishnah, when Reuven is saying your $400 ox damaged mine, and Shimon is saying no, my $100 ox did, that's Tane Chitim Bahari Lebesar, two different animals. According to Rabbi Bar Nosson, you should be potter. Yet the Mishnah seems to be implying that you're chayev at least $100. Now, why is that? So if you were to explain the Mishnah is talking about Bori Veshema, okay, that's different. Rabbi Bar Nosson's case is talking about Bori and Bori. So you can make a distinction. Reuven is saying, you definitely owe me wheat. Shimon is counterclaiming, I definitely owe you only barley. That's different than if you were to say that barley or barley. As opposed to, if you were to say, Reuven is saying, your $400 ox did the damage. Shimon is saying, I'm not sure, maybe it was the $100 ox. That would be different. Then you could argue, Shimon's Shema claim is weaker. But if you say that it's barley or barley, then you have a contradiction to Dava Bar Nosson. So okay, we have to say then that we have to say in order to not slug up Rav Bar Nosson that we'd have to say that case is 400 Bori
B'Shema. Otherwise, if it was Bori B'Bari, you would say it's 400 in any case.
No, then you'd say it's 100 in any case. It's 100 in any case because of
yeah.
So the question then becomes:
means
one says Bori, the other one says Shema. Yeah. So we have to figure to call him a Bori Ma. Fine. Which one of the two of them is the one making the Bori claim? Dekama Bori Man, Dekama Shema Man. Who is saying the Bori claim? Who among the two of them is saying the Shema claim? E name Dekama Nizik Bori, Dekama Mazik Shema. If you're going to say the case is the Nizik says it was for sure the $400 off, and the Mazik is saying, I'm not sure, it may have been that one, or it may have been the 100, still, Akatu Lema Tevetitu of the Rabbi Bar Nosson. You would still, the Mishnah would still be an upschlag to Rabbi Bar Nosson. Because the nizik in our Mishnah is the equivalent of again, what is the Mishnah saying? That you get at least 100.
Yeah.
So you get at least 100. So why? Because the Nizik is making a definite claim. So regardless whether the Mazik is making a Bori claim or a Shema claim, either way the Mishnah is implying you're entitled to 100. In Rabbi Bar Nosson's din, you would be potter from the Sa'urim either way, regardless whether you said I definitely owe you Sa'urim or I might owe you Sa'urim, either way you'd be potter, yeah.
It's not a bright statement.
It's not Mizikin. It doesn't matter. No. There's no reason, there's no logical reason to draw the distinction.
Yeah. Like that.
Yeah. The din of a body and shamar are still the same between them.
Ella.
No, so let's try the other way around. A common nizik shamar, a common mazik body. Fine, let's say the other way around. The nizik is saying, I'm not sure. It may have been your $400 ox, in which case you'd owe me the full chatzi nizik, or it may have been your $100 ox, and in that case you owe me only $100.
Right.
And the mazik is saying, no, for sure it was a smaller ox. Well, in that case, fine. If we need a safer nizik shema or mazik body, fine. If that's the case, then if the safer is talking about a case like that, reishanami nizik shema or mazik body. So evidently, in the first case of the Mishnah, again, going back to the case where the two oxen belong to two different people, it must also be the nizik is saying one of you guys' oxen damaged mine. I'm not sure which one. And the mazik, since the safer, we just established that the safer must be talking about where the nizik is only making a shema claim. It may have been your $400 ox, it may have been your $100 ox. The ratio, when it talks about where two different people, where two different people's oxen are involved, must also be talking about shema versus body. He goes to each one of them and he says, your ox was chasing after mine, it may have damaged mine. And the other one is saying, no, it definitely wasn't mine, it was definitely the other guy's. So now the question becomes, what do you mean? Sumchus says that the would Sumchus say his case a moment on multiple sophist kolkin that the Mishnah should have to tell us to come disagree with him? Why would even Sumchus hold that kolkin in a case like this where you're only coming with a shema claim in the first place, which is a very weak claim?
What was Sumchus said?
We said that we started off the sugya by saying that the Chachamim disagree with Sumchus. He says, "Mamana multiple sophist kolkin." The Chachamim disagree and say, "Amos machavel avardai from our Mishnah." But if you're saying that our Mishnah is talking about the nizik to begin with, only made a shema claim, even Sumchus wouldn't hold Amos machavel. I wouldn't hold Mamana multiple sophist kolkin. I come to you and say, maybe your ox damaged mine, and because of that, I should be entitled to half the value of your ox. What's the logic? The answer is like, Sefer Nizik Shemo Mazik Bari. No, we could answer that the Sefer is, in fact, as we just said, the Nizik is arguing Shema. Maybe it was your $400 off, maybe it was your $100. And the Mazik counterclaims and says it was definitely the $100. And that's why we're saying that he's entitled to the $100. Reisha Nizik Bari or Mazik Shema. However, we could assume that the Reisha is the other way around. The Nizik is claiming for sure it was definitely your ox injured mine. And the Mazik is saying, I'm not sure. It may have been mine, it may have been the other guy. That is the case where Sumchus would argue, Momana multiple suffered kolkin, because after all, I came to you with a body claim, and you're only counterclaiming Shema, and the Chachamim would still disagree and say, even though all you have is a very weak counterclaim, a Shema, nevertheless, and I have a body, I'm still going to have to bring proof before I can collect anything from you. Okay, the question is, fine, if we're going to go that way, though, the Reisha and the Sefer are not parallel cases.
So.
The answer is no. Ambi. Bori v'shema, shema bori chad milti. No, because you could argue that when you have a bori claim and a shema claim, regardless whether it's the plaintiff claiming one and the defendant the other, or the other way around, either way, they're similar cases. You have a weak claim and a strong claim opposing each other in basis.
They don't have to be exactly the same.
Right. Bori, shema or bori, tre milinin. But to have the commissioner would be talking first about a case of bori or bori, and then switching over to a case of bori or shema. Shema or bori, tre milinin, those are two different kinds of things. One where you have strong claims on both sides, and one where you have a weak claim on both sides. The commissioner wouldn't
really
be doing
it.
They have to be totally parallel. So that's parallel enough to work, yeah.
But bori, shema, no.
Right.
And that's according to...
Well, so that's what we're saying. That's what Gemara is saying. That, but now that fits with what Rabbi Chiya Ba'aba is saying, that implicitly from our Mishnah, we see the Chachamim disagree with Sukkos. And it also leaves us still that Rav Bar Nosson's din can still be valid, that Tarnach Chit and Vahodele Besodim will in fact be possible. Pause over here, I guess. Tomorrow, then, Shannon.